I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, it's finally happening. The Trump administration has its eyes on Washington State. The U.S. Department of Education says it will investigate the Tumwater School District for violations of Title IX. Plus, 25 Washington State Senate Democrats put out a constitutional amendment that would protect abortions up to birth and would make gender surgeries unrestricted for people of any age. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We knew it was only a matter of time before Washington State drew the gaze of the Trump administration, and I felt left out for a while, to be honest with you. I mean, he was fighting with the governor of Maine, and I thought, fight with Bob Ferguson. He's picking fights with other states who wouldn't enforce some of his executive orders, and I'm like, pick a fight with us. And the day has finally come. And I will say I give all the credit in the world, not just to Frances Stout, who we had on this show. In fact, this was the first interview that Frances did with her mom after her decision to sit out her final basketball game of the year for Tumwater High School in Washington State, because there's a biological boy on the other team. And so Frances's willingness to speak out, I think, has led to what we're going to discuss today, but also all the girls that came before her. We know there have been multiple young women in Washington State who, you know, teenagers who did what adults could not do and stood up for themselves and said, look, we don't want to play against biological boys. I think of Anna Lee Wilson, who we'll discuss here coming up momentarily, who also sat on this show with me and talked at length about why she felt it was so important to stand up for herself, to stand up for girls, even when adults in this state and politicians in this state would not protect girls and keep men out of women's spaces. So, of course, we talked about Frances Stout's interview on this show, sat down, did a long interview with her. We talked about her story, rather, and it has since gone national. So as much as I'd like to take credit for this, probably more likely that the Trump administration and the U.S. Department of Education saw this story on like libs of TikTok, or I know that Frances and her mom went on Fox and Friends, an interview that we helped to arrange. And so I think now all the attention towards Frances's story has led to this moment, the U.S. Department of Education saying they will investigate the Tumwater School District here in Washington State for a civil rights Title IX investigation. In a press release, they said the Department of Education's Office for Civil Rights, Seattle branch, opened an investigation into the Tumwater School District amid allegations that it continues to violate Title IX by allowing male athletes to compete in girls' interscholastic athletics. They said if Washington wants to continue to receive federal funds from the department, it has to follow federal law. And so, again, you know, I think a lot of these fights are still playing out and will continue to play out in the courts. But the fact that the U.S. Department of Education is now saying Tumwater is one example of the continued efforts to thwart President Donald Trump's executive order that boys can't play against girls, men can't play against women. Boys can't be in girls' spaces. And if you have school districts in this country that continue to do that, they will have their federal dollars withheld. So I think that this is a good place to start, certainly, to be able to have the federal government looking at us, investigating what's going on here. But we know it's not just happening in the Tumwater School District. This is an edict from Democrats in the state of Washington. This is an edict from the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. There is no school district in the state, even in conservative areas of the state, that can stop or has been able to stop allowing boys to play against girls, because right now, in the state of Washington, that's just fine. So you can't, as an individual school district, go out on your own and say, well, we're not going to allow that anymore when the state says you must. So even in Tumwater, and I would note, we talked on the show yesterday, the Tumwater School Board voted to support amendments to WIAA policy, that's the Washington Interscholastic Activities Association policy, that are under consideration right now that would statewide prohibit biological boys from competing against girls. But the Tumwater School Board, as much as it wants to do that, it doesn't really have a say. So there's an element of me that thinks maybe it's a little unfair for the U.S. Department of Education to just go after the Tumwater School District, when in reality, who they need to go after is Chris Reykdal, the superintendent of public instruction, Governor Bob Ferguson, Attorney General Nick Brown, and anyone else who's involved in the decisions to continue to allow this to happen. But this is such good news, and I think we're only going to see an increased effort to crack down on states like Washington that continue in this extreme gender ideology front. Meanwhile, I mentioned Annalee Wilson. Annalee lost the Junior Olympics track meet to a biological boy. She started speaking out after that, came on this show. I met her at an event where she spoke in front of 500 adults and Riley Gaines about the importance of protecting girls' spaces. So now a separate group has filed a complaint seeking the same thing from the U.S. Department of Education, but on a broader scale. This is from, it says, Washington parents fight Title IX complaint against Washington State. The Washington Parents Network is the organization that has filed this against Washington Superintendent Chris Reykdal and Washington Governor Bob Ferguson. It says today, this is from a few days ago, but the Washington Parents Network filed a 99-page Title IX complaint against the superintendent and the Washington governor to restore fairness in girls' sports. The complaint was filed with the U.S. Department of Education Office of Civil Rights. It says our complaint seeks to enforce an important federal law called Title IX, which was passed 53 years ago to end discrimination against girls and women in education and athletic programs that receive federal funding. So that's a more broad complaint, but Annalee Wilson's case brought this about. So you have kind of these two tracks. You already have the attention, and I really think it's because, although I'll take a little credit for helping to get Francis's story out there initially, but you know, once it's on libs of TikTok, once it's in the New York Post, once it's on Fox and Friends, I think it just gained so much national attention that the Trump administration had to act against the Tumwater School District. But then, of course, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't have a more widespread investigation into the practices of the state as a whole. And I hope, and I hate to see money taken away from schools and to punish schools that are in, you know, red areas or common sense schools who don't want any of this crap, but who are having it thrust upon them. But I think until federal funding gets taken away, they're not going to realize the true pain that continuing with these extreme policies will cause. I would also note, through and through, Washington State and our elected leaders, they want boys to take up women's spaces. They support boys playing against girls. They support boys being in girls' locker rooms. And look no further than the two senators from our state, Maria Cantwell and Patty Murray, who they were among the Democratic senators who voted against keeping boys out of girls' sports. That is the Protection of Women and Girls' Sports Bill was up for a vote. And all the Democrats, not, we couldn't muster one Democrat, huh? Couldn't muster one Democrat, even Fetterman voted against it. Couldn't muster one Democratic vote in the U.S. Senate to protect women and girls in sports. So in case you want to believe that the Democratic Party is woken up and is going further to the middle now and is trying to be more moderate and doesn't want to engage in these sorts of, you know, fringe social issues and pushing them, I mean, that's proof right there. And of course, no surprise that the two senators from our state fell in line with that. So that's great news, and that's happening. So continue to share stories like Francis's story. I think it's also hopefully motivation for other people to continue to speak up, young women to speak up, because those are the most powerful voices. You know, I have people pinging us all the time to come on the show and talk about this issue, but I really think the most powerful voices that have led to the most change are the girls themselves. I mean, look what Riley Gaines was able to accomplish by speaking out for herself as an athlete. So as much as I want adults to join the conversation, the voices that are truly driving change on this issue are the young girls who are being impacted by this decision and who are brave enough to stand up for themselves. People like Annalee Wilson, people like Riley Gaines, people like Frances Stout. So a lot of big stories to get to today. I broke a story last night on social media. You might have seen it. This is a stunning decision from Washington State Democrats. And it's also baffling. I'm not entirely sure what their intention is. And I think there might be a few things at play here, but let me just talk about it more broadly. So last night, Washington State Senate Democrats introduced a constitutional amendment. It is Senate Joint Resolution 8204. It is supported by 25 of 30 Democrats in the state house or the state Senate in Olympia. And what they're doing is putting forth a constitutional amendment that will do two things. It will codify abortion protections, but there's also a sneaky line in there to protect radical gender ideology. I'm going to read the entirety of the amendment to you because it's very short. It says, be it resolved by the Senate and House of Representatives of the state of Washington in legislative sessions assembled, that at the next general election to be held in this state, the Secretary of State shall submit to the qualified voters of the state for their approval and ratification or rejection a new article to the Constitution of the state of Washington to read as follows. Section 1, reproductive freedom and gender-affirming care. The state shall not deny or interfere with an individual's reproductive freedom decisions, which includes the individual's fundamental right to choose to have an abortion, the individual's fundamental right to choose to use contraception, the individual's fundamental right to choose to use assisted reproductive technology, and the individual's fundamental right to be free from discrimination on the basis of the individual's pregnancy outcome. Nor shall the state deny or interfere with an individual's gender-affirming care decisions. So you see how, and on its face when I first saw this, I thought, these SOBs, they are going to try to protect radical gender surgeries for kids by couching it in a constitutional amendment about protecting abortion. We already know that protecting abortion in this state has been part of our law since the 1970s. And that it's pretty popular in the state of Washington, the idea of codifying abortion rights. Less popular, perhaps, is the idea of cutting off the breasts and genitals of young kids who think they're a gender other than the one they were born. So when I first saw this constitutional amendment, I thought, those sneaky snakes. They know, and they can message this as, oh, we're just protecting abortion access, while they sneak in a line at the bottom that also protects gender-affirming care. So I saw that, and I thought, that's insane. I mean, that's a new low for them. But then I got to thinking about it further and thought, well, it's a constitutional amendment, which means it requires a two-thirds vote in the House and the Senate before it even goes in front of voters, which they have strong majorities, but they can't accomplish a two-thirds vote on something like this. And so I thought, well, what's the point then? They know they're not going to get the votes in the House or the Senate to put this constitutional amendment before voters. So why would they bother, I guess? And then the wheels start to turn. And I thought initially, okay, well, what they want to do is they want to push this for a vote so that they can have Republicans on the record opposing it. And we all know that Democrats don't really care about facts. And so what that gives them is election ammunition for every single Republican who votes against it in the House and the Senate. They can say, well, they voted against abortion access. So they're forcing their hand, essentially, even though there's much more to this constitutional amendment, including protecting gender-affirming care. Now, half-truths are fine, so they can go in the next election for races in the House and the Senate as they try to solidify their and reach a supermajority in Olympia. They know it's really unpopular if they can say that someone voted against abortion access. So this would give them the ability to do that for every single Republican lawmaker in Washington state. And I think that's the real motivation here. But here's the thing. They're not as sneaky as they think. Because in doing this and putting out this constitutional amendment, they have actually solidified themselves as the extremists. Because when you read that constitutional amendment, it is basically saying that they want there to be no restrictions on abortion and no restrictions at all on gender care, So now, if we flip it around on them, these 25 Senate Democrats are signaling that they want to allow abortions up to birth, which is incredibly extreme, not popular. They want gender surgeries at any age. Because again, the language in the constitutional amendment doesn't set age limits on it. It says, nor shall the state deny or interfere with an individual's gender-affirming care decisions. That means that there would be no restrictions at all on gender-affirming care to include surgeries, mutilation of children of any age at all. On the plain reading of this constitutional amendment, that would mean that these 25 Democratic state senators want a kid as young as 9 years old to be able to cut their breasts off because they believe they're a boy. That is an extreme position. And also, if in the reading of this constitutional amendment, there's nothing in here about age, and therefore nothing in here about parental consent. So what these 20, in trying to play some sort of trick to get ammunition for their next elections, Democrats have basically said that their position is abortions up to birth, gender surgeries at any age, and no parental consent or notice. That's as extreme a position on anything being debated in Washington state right now. And as I said, this isn't just the position of a few rogue Senate Democrats. No, this is the names of 25 of 30 Senate Democrats are on that constitutional amendment. And that means all 25 of them who put their names on it now are saying that they support abortions up to birth, gender surgeries at any age, and no parental consent or notice for any of it. All 25 of the Democratic state senators who signed that constitutional amendment have now exposed themselves as radical extremists. And you guys know, I'm pro-choice. I'm not pro-choice up to birth. And I think that's the position for a lot of women in particular in our state, even women who are more conservative. The law in Washington state right now is abortions up to the point of fetal viability. It's been that way since the 1970s. This would say essentially no restrictions whatsoever because the constitutional amendment lacks any sort of specificity. And if they put this constitutional amendment, if it were to somehow pass or something, that would supersede any state law because you wouldn't be able to have state laws that are contrary to the state constitution. And so again, just on the reading of this constitutional amendment, if they say the state shall not deny or interfere with an individual's reproductive freedom decisions, nor shall the state deny or interfere with an individual's gender-affirming care decisions, that means that you cannot create state laws that limit what they're calling those fundamental rights. So the existing state law that limits abortions past the point of fetal viability, null and void. Existing state law that says, hey, kids, you can have gender reassignment surgeries, but you need parental consent if you're under the age of 18, null and void. So in trying to play some weird game where they could get Republicans on the record voting against abortion access, you now have the state Democratic Party that has exposed itself and is now putting its stake in the ground as having the extreme positions of abortions until the point of birth and gender surgeries for kids of any age. That's disturbing. And it's important to make sure when these things happen, I think it could be easy to you know, rail against the constitutional amendment and, oh my God, why would they sneak gender care into that or whatever it is, and understand that maybe this is sort of an election ploy. But it's important to look at these opportunities and take these opportunities to shift the narrative and to put them back on their heels. So they might have thought this is harmless. Oh my gosh, Republicans are going to have to vote against this. And that's going to give us so much ammunition, so much money coming in from national interests into our elections. It's going to be great. But now we put it back on them and we put them on their heels. And we now say for every single one of these senators, every time that they do anything, every time that they run for office and run a campaign, Senators Slatter, Christensen, Cleveland, Dingra, Saldana, Alvarado, Valdez, Peterson, Solomon, Cortez, Orwell, Conway, Lovelett, Nobles, Shoemake, Lovick, Riccelli, Ramos, Hasegawa, Frame, Leas, Wilson, Stanford, Kaufman, Robinson. Every single one of them now has to own the position that they support abortions up to the point of birth, and they support gender surgeries for children of any age without parental consent or notice. So a little bit of a self-inflicted wound there if we use it to our advantage. All right, one other big thing that happened just before the show today, holy smokes, on the parental rights, children, education front, a lot of stories on that today. So we've been talking about efforts from Democrats in Olympia to undo the Parental Bill of Rights that was passed via the initiative process just last year. And basically, as you know, the Parental Bill of Rights said, hey, I have a right to know what's happening with my kid at school. Wow, how controversial. So there was 500,000 Washingtonians that signed that initiative. It was passed into law by the legislature. And what do? Well, Democrats don't like that. They don't want to let parents know if your kids are showing up at school and being indoctrinated in radical gender ideology. And all of a sudden they think they're a girl or a boy and they're being called by a different name and they're getting medications through school or they're seeing a therapist or they're depressed or whatever it is. So they don't want that. And so what they did is they turned around, they introduced Senate Bill 5181. We've talked about this quite a bit on the show. This is the effort from Democrats to undo key aspects of the Parental Bill of Rights, to say, no, we don't think, you know, despite the initiative, we don't think parents have a right to know with what's happening with their kids at school. So we're just going to undo all of that, that you guys worked hard for on the initiative process and that we actually signed into law less than a year ago. But our intent was always to come back and introduce a bill just like this so we could undo the Parental Bill of Rights. Well, two can play at that game, because this morning, Let's Go Washington has filed a preemptive initiative saying it plans to seek to overturn Senate Bill 5181 if it passes. This from Let's Go Washington. So they have actually filed the initiative. Now, of course, it would be contingent on 5181 actually passing. But this is their effort to basically warn Democrats, if you decide to move forward with 5181, if you decide to essentially undo the initiative we ran last year that so many parents supported, we will immediately start collecting signatures for an initiative and we will immediately seek to repeal it. So Democrats now have a decision to make, because they've been warned. They can continue to go against the will of the people and can continue to push this narrative that schools can parent better than you can, that the government can parent better than you can. Or they can do the smart thing and they can back away from it and realize, hey, this is what voters want. This was passed via the initiative process, and we would be way outside of our rules to go back and immediately undo it. So they can do the smart thing and they can back away from this fight, or they can move forward. They can spend, and their political allies can dish out millions, tens of millions of dollars trying to defend against another initiative, or they can do the right thing and they can keep the Parental Bill of Rights intact. So I love this. I love that Let's Go Washington is getting out in front of it and is saying, okay, keep debating it if you want, when you should be focusing on, I don't know, closing our $14 billion budget gap, and instead you're focused on stripping parents of their rights. Keep going that direction if you want, but if you do, there's going to be a very, very costly fight ahead. And I'll say of this, if this initiative goes to the ballot, they won't be able to run the same tricks on it, because it doesn't have any sort of fiscal note. So that was one of the things that confused the initiatives the last time around, is they had to add this little addendum that said, oh, if you repeal, you know, this tax, this is the impact. There's nothing like that on here. So it would just be a straight up, essentially, do you want to repeal this bill or not? And I think there's a lot of parents who would say, yeah, because I supported the parental rights initiative to begin with. Why are we even playing this game again? So I love that. So something to keep an eye on if Democrats decide to move forward with Senate Bill 5181. All right, a lot more to come. I've encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. What is the First Mark Challenge, Brandy? Well, as I've been telling you, it's really simple. You schedule some time with First Mark Insurance to go over your current insurance, talk about your insurance needs. They go out, they shop all the carriers at their disposal, and they try to find, first and foremost, make sure they're finding policies that actually protect what you need protected, but to see if they can get those policies at a better price than you're paying now. And you don't pay First Mark anything for the First Mark Challenge, and you never pay First Mark anything for their services. So it really is a no-brainer. And we hear from people all the time that they saved thousands of dollars just by taking the First Mark Challenge. Eric says that he'd been managing his own policies. He decided, okay, let me try the First Mark Challenge. I guess I'll listen to Brandy. And we saved him. First Mark saved him 30% on his auto policy and 70% on his homeowner's policy. He says, I'm not exaggerating. And now tell anyone I know who's dealing with changes to their insurance to give First Mark a call. I did, and I'm truly richer for it. So don't sacrifice on the type of insurance you need. You don't have to do that with First Mark. They're going to find you great insurance at the best price, and we'll see if it'll beat the insurance that you have now. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Okay, the tariff tiff is on. So Trump had temporarily delayed tariffs for Mexico and Canada when they said, oh my gosh, we're going to help you with border security. Apparently not enough. So the tariffs, 25% against Canadian and Mexican goods, are now in place. And of course, Canada and Mexico coming out and saying there will be retaliatory tariffs as well. So I think it's important to make sure, and I would encourage you as well, I think we all get into our echo chambers. I think you have to be clear-eyed about this, right? Tariffs are essentially taxes. That is true. Now, you can believe that the tariffs are necessary to accomplish what President Trump wants to accomplish, but that doesn't mean that we don't understand that there are likely going to be some economic challenges that result and some challenges for families and your budget and the cost of goods and all of those things. And I think that's the camp I fall into. You know, the border crisis has had an untold impact on our economy. I mean, we look at it in Washington State and the drain on our social safety net and our homelessness programs and all of these things, not to mention crime and loss of life. And so you're looking at it on sort of a scale. You know, are the tariffs worth, if they can accomplish President Trump's ends, his goals on immigration, are they worth it? And I think there's a lot of Americans who would say, yes, I'm willing to pay a little bit more for goods if we can get this border situation under control. But we have to be honest about what the impacts are going to be, especially if the tariff war drags on. So one of the impacts, this is from the Seattle Times, is that the tariffs could be just another thing that increases the cost of housing, building housing, renting, et cetera, in Washington State at a time when you know it's already incredibly expensive to build a home, to buy a home, to rent a home or an apartment. And so some of these goods that we bring in to Washington State, mostly from Canada, but also from Mexico, appliances and stuff, everything that goes into building a home, maintaining a home, renovating a home, whatever it is, it's just true that the cost of those things is going to go up. So we asked our friend Sean Flynn with the Rental Housing Association of Washington to come on and talk to us about, you know, again, we're already facing a lot of challenges because of Democratic policies on the cost of housing, but how this could just make things worse. Sean Flynn, welcome back to Undivided.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we've got all these things that are increasing the cost of home ownership and thus increasing the cost of renting. So let's be honest about the tariffs. If these tariffs are here to stay for really any meaningful length of time, what's the impact that could have on our housing market?
Well, you know, we import a lot of things specifically from Canada and Mexico that we use to build housing, repair housing, maintain housing. And they're talking, the Trump administration's, last I checked, it was a 25% tariff on those goods. So yeah, that does a couple things. Immediately, it makes things more expensive. But as that trickles to the economy, it's going to push inflation, right? Which means we won't get interest rate cuts anytime soon, probably. This is going to make housing less affordable across the board. And it'll really, really harm any maintenance and new builds of affordable housing, because the housing that will pencil has to be expensive housing. The average build per square foot in the city of Seattle right now is $450 a square foot. And that's now. So you see those, once the tariffs go into effect and that inflation hits that the cost of build, it's only going to go up.
Yeah, and then once it's built, it's built. And so that's how much somebody, you know what I mean? It's not like, so if you need that now and you need those goods now and you're building the home now and it increases the cost of building the home, obviously it sells for more money. So somebody's mortgage is higher. And if they end up renting it out, I mean, that's higher. So you can't really escape that once you've had to pay the higher cost to build.
Yeah, no, once that cost is in place, it trickles down to the end product almost instantaneously, right? They're not going to stop building houses that are halfway built because of the cost, right? Now, so effectively, what we'll end up building is just very expensive housing.
Yeah. Well, what about, I mean, if you're looking at your members, so landlords right now in the immediate term, would that just impact them if it comes to upgrades that they're making to the home or renovations or something?
Yeah, and maintenance, right? For those of listeners who have owned their own homes, right? They know all the stuff you've got to do to maintain it, right? We can think not that long ago when during the COVID supply chain crisis, how hard it was to get a dishwasher, right? Well, now that dishwasher, right? We all remember that it was like 8 months to get a dishwasher. And dishwashers break, like stuff, just that's how houses work. Just you need a new refrigerator every so often. Well, there's going to be tariffs on those goods too. So that dishwasher is now going to be 25% more expensive at least. And no one was calculating that in when rents were set 6 months ago per the rules. And so, this leads us to a topic that I discuss frequently on your show on how dangerous the idea of rent caps are, especially in an environment that no one has any control over this. Even our Washington state legislature and our governor has no control over the tariff situation, but we're going to feel it almost instantaneously, and we're going to feel it intensely in the cost of housing.
Yeah. What I don't want to see, though, and I can already predict it in the Seattle Times article, I think it's a good example. I don't know that the Times has been as aggressive in covering some of the cost increases driven by Democrats and local policies. And now it's like, oh, well, Trump's going to drive up the cost of building housing here. So, like, Trump bad. And so it's important to be realistic about all of these things. But what I don't want to see is all of a sudden this, like, hand-wringing over the cost of housing and building housing from Democrats here when they haven't taken accountability for what they've done to drive up the cost of housing.
Well, what I'll say is that economics doesn't care about which party you are. The rules
True.
of economics, it's like the tide or gravity. It just is. And politically, I don't think it's fair for folks to say that there's an economic impact to one party's policies and not recognize the economic impact of their own policies. So, or to put a finer point on it, if we're opposed to the tariffs because it drives the cost up of housing, we also have to be opposed to rent control because it's a proven economic model of a failure in terms of keeping rent under control.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, it's moral consistency. And look, I support to an extent the Trump tariffs for other reasons. You know, I think border security is something that has impacts throughout our economy, and we need to get a hold of it. But that doesn't mean that you close your eyes to the reality that it is going to hurt certain sectors of our economy and it is going to increase costs for Americans. So as long as you're clear-eyed about it and you understand what it's going to do and you can be morally consistent about it, I think that's really all you can do at the end of the day. So all right, Sean Flynn, well, just one more thing for your members to be overjoyed about.
yeah, it's not an easy time to be a housing provider in the state of Washington, but we do a public service. Providing housing for those who can't afford the already expensive cost of housing to buy is a moral good, and I think that the state should recognize that more often.
Yeah, so I think that's the big takeaway for me is like, our housing has been expensive for a long time, and so much of what Democrats have done have increased. They're just and these are meaningless regulations, burdensome regulations put on home builders, you know, environmental regulations to make Democrats feel good, and all of them increase the cost of housing by hundreds of thousands of dollars in some instances. And you don't see this hand-wringing over that. And so I'm not saying that the Trump tariffs aren't going to likely drive up the cost of building a home, especially if they last for an extended period of time. But let's not all orange man bad on it if we're not willing to look at everything and be honest about everything that Democrats have done that have had home prices through the roof for years and years and years and years. So worth talking about. But again, Democrats are to blame for a lot of the housing costs in the state of Washington. Our weekly housing segment is brought to you by the Rental Housing Association of Washington. If you are a small to mid-sized landlord, make sure you become a member of RHA. They are advocating on your behalf in Olympia, and they can help you navigate Washington's really messed up landlord-tenant laws. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. All right. As I continue to discuss on the show, Democrats in Washington state are showing time and time again that they do not care about children. They don't care about keeping kids safe. They don't care about protecting kids from drugs. They don't care about protecting kids from sexually explicit material. So we'll have a double dose of unbelievable to talk about some more happenings on the just what the F front from Democrats. First, Boulder Capital and our friend Zach Abraham are having another one of their live webinars coming up on March 20th, totally free to sign up. And they're going to be talking about the first 100 days of the Trump administration and how all of it could impact your retirement portfolio for good and for bad. And there's been a lot going on, certainly, with the economy. Tariffs, I think, will now become part of the conversation. So what Zach and his team are going to cover. So first 100 days of the Trump administration, the rapid changes, how they could impact retirement portfolios, and then they'll do a longer-term outlook for 2025, and of course a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So wouldn't you like to run your portfolio through a Department of Retirement Efficiency? Well, you can do that with Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital. It's totally free. Sign up for Zach's first 100 days webinar Thursday, March 20th at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. Register now. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. All right. Another tragic case that is likely the result of Democratic efforts to, quote, keep families together, even if that means that those efforts to keep families together lead to kids dying. Let's talk about it in our segment. Unbelievable. Oop. Okay. This is just awful. But again, these cases, you know, one of my big frustrations with what's happening in Olympia right now, you have the gatekeeper of public safety policies over in the House, Representative Roger Goodman, who just has no interest, and for several years now has had no interest in even giving hearings to bills that would protect kids from drug abusing parents, from parents who have proven unfit. Because the whole idea is, oh, we got to keep families together. I mean, we played a clip from him the other day where he was literally saying, you know, we don't want to criminalize parents, for instance, if they have leave fentanyl around the home and a kid touches it or ingests it and dies, because, you know, we can't separate. We don't want to separate families when a child dying is like the ultimate form of separation. But there's been all these horrific instances of really, I think, the state failing to protect kids from parents, even knowing that the parent was not fit in that moment for whatever reason. Maybe they were going through substance abuse issues. Maybe they're just a bad person, was not fit to have that child. So another horrible case out of Yakima, this from the Yakima Herald Republic, truly horrific. Yakima woman charged with manslaughter in starvation death of infant daughter. And it turns out that this woman had been on the radar of the state of Washington. I mean, you don't just one day wake up and decide you're not going to feed your infant daughter or anything. There had certainly been some warning signs that this child should not be in that home. Again, this from the Yakima Herald. Kalia Rose Toll, 20, is the mom, was also charged with first-degree criminal mistreatment and family abandonment in connection with a seven-month-old girl. She also faces charges of criminal mistreatment and family abandonment for her two-year-old daughter, whom Yakima police found starving in the home. She's currently being held in the Yakima County Jail in lieu of $20,000 bail on the case involving her children, in addition to $5,000 bail on a 2023 case where she's accused of starving a pair of dogs, resulting in the death of one of them. So she already had a case in 2023 where she starved the family's dogs, one of them to death. And now she's accused of starving her daughter to death. It says, this from the Yakima Prosecuting Attorney's Office, we believe that we will aggressively move forward on this case. It's truly horrific. He said the earlier case involving the abuse of two dogs at the home in December 2023 was not filed then because of a shortage of attorneys. The last several years, we've had to make very difficult decisions, and this was a decision that was made within our office to not charge it in lieu of potential more serious charges, and obviously there was no indication whatsoever that an event like this would take place. What do you mean there was no indication whatsoever that an event like this would take place? So you decide, because of a shortage of attorneys, this woman who starved her dogs, one of them to death, that you wouldn't take action on it. And you said there was no indication whatsoever that any event like this would take place. So she starved her dogs, and you don't think that's an indication that she could starve her children too? And now her daughter's dead. It's just insane stuff. And I read in the state agency, what is the state agency? Wouldn't comment.
DCYF?
Oh, yeah, DCYF. Oh, it's a privacy thing with the family. So they can't comment. How convenient is that? How convenient is that?
We received a few emails from listeners saying that this woman was pretty well known in the city, and they all knew those kids were in trouble.
Yeah. Had starved multiple children. Now one of them's dead. Had starved multiple dogs. One of them's dead. State says, oh, no comment on this. Prosecutor says, no indication that a tragedy like this could happen. Really? No indication whatsoever. This is what we get for keeping families together. Speaking of, so there's the fentanyl bill that died in the House, couldn't get through the Public Safety Committee and Roger Goodman. And what it would have done, as you know, is it would have increased the punishments for parents who leave like fentanyl laying around and their kid ingests it. There's been instances of children dying. But Roger Goodman's like, no, I'm not going to give that a hearing. He did, however, give a hearing to a bill that would have lowered the punishment for parents who cook meth around kids. So that's an interesting set of priorities. The good news is, though, that there's a bill on the Senate side that's still alive. So what happens is the House and the Senate, they debate their individual bills. And some of them are similar, right? And then once the Senate passes a bill, it goes over to the House for consideration. Once the House passes a bill, it goes to the Senate. So there was a Senate bill, a bipartisan bill in the Senate that did survive, that was passed. And so that is now kind of waiting in limbo to see, well, maybe Representative Roger Goodman wants to hear this bill in the House Public Safety Committee. And the Seattle Times editorial board is essentially saying, you need to hear this and you need to pass it. So as much as I'm critical of the Seattle Times editorial board, I appreciate them taking a stand on this one. The editorial they just put out, Washington's children need House Democrats to vote on endangerment law. And so in this, they point out that a similar bill had died in committee last year and the year before that, even after passing unanimously in the Senate. House Democrats, according to Rep. Roger Goodman last year, viewed the legislation as part of the failed war on drugs. Good God. The Ed Board says, don't simply kill the legislation by inaction or propose repealing the law on child endangerment when it involves methamphetamine. If all drug laws are bad, they say, leaving the status quo leaves House Democrats open to criticism that they value ideological purity over protecting children's lives. They say as the fentanyl crisis continues to take more lives, that stance ought to be politically untenable, one would think. So even the Seattle Times saying it, that if you don't take action on these bills, you are essentially saying you value ideology over kids' lives. I don't know if that will get through to Rep. Roger Goodman, but before more kids die, I hope it does. So also on the Democrats, like, have some weird, sick thing about not protecting kids from actual, like, violence and then exposing kids to perverse stuff. Let's talk about it in a double dose of Unbelievable. So there is a bill going through Olympia right now called House Bill 1834, and it has to do with protecting kids online. But apparently not protecting kids online if it means protecting them from pornography. Yeah, so this is, again, House Bill 1834, and this was up for debate, and there was an amendment introduced by Republicans. Like, hey, could we also, as part of protecting kids online, I don't know, ban porn from being viewed on library computers? Like, that would help protect kids, right? Or really, anyone who wants to go use a computer at the library and they've got some homeless man who came in and wants to, you know, to some porn somewhere, but the only place he can access it is on the computer at the library. Well, Democrats, it will come as no surprise, rejected that amendment and said, no, I don't think we'll ban porn from libraries. Here's Representative Cindy Rieu saying, nah, I'm not interested.
Unfortunately, this amendment affects access to content, which this bill is not intending to restrict. And so this policy would definitely be more appropriate in a separate bill.
Yeah, they'll go with the First Amendment. I love how Democrats are champions of the First Amendment when it comes to protecting porn in libraries. Really picking and choosing your battles. Just truly unbelievable. And then add that to Democrats voting against the amendment that said if your child is like molested by a teacher, a parent has to be notified within 48 hours or notified immediately. Democrats are like, nah, 48 hours is fine. And then you'll recall last year that Democrats rejected an amendment that would ban sexually explicit books from school libraries. And they're like, nah, we don't need to do that. So they want sexually explicit books in school libraries. They want you to be able to watch porn at public libraries. They don't want to tell parents right away if some teacher is perving on their kids. So doesn't that all tell a tale to you? Tells a tale to me.
Obsession.
Obsession.
With over-sexualizing kids. They're all.
Obsession. We have to let them be exposed to it. Like, what is wrong with you? It's so strange.
Ugh.
All right. We'll get to national news coming up next, including Democrats, just a bunch of parrots. Some great video that was making the rounds on social media this morning. First, if you're thinking about selling your home at any point this year, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. There's still a ton of demand out there. The issue is really low inventory. So homes that do hit the market right now are selling quickly due to that pent up buyer demand and the limited options up there. So sellers are facing less competition on the market. So it's an advantageous time to list in the spring market is in full swing. So March, May, these are going to be big months of the year, great months to list a home. And listing now allows you to get ahead of the increased competition that's going to come up kind of in May and later towards the spring. So great time, according to Wes. And of course, he says homes that are properly prepared for listing and priced correctly are performing the best. Both of those things he can help you with. Make sure that your home is properly prepared for listing. They've got the Listing Boost concierge service. He can come in, help you make cosmetic updates to your home. Even help you pay for them up front, which I know is a big kind of stress reliever. And then he's going to make sure that your home is priced correctly so you can get the best possible offer. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, President Donald Trump's doing his State of the Union address tonight. And of course, some Democrats throwing a temper tantrum saying they are not coming. One of them is Senator Patty Murray of Washington. She posted on X, the State of the Union is that the president is spitting in the face of the law. He's letting an unelected billionaire fire cancer researchers and wreck federal agencies like the Social Security Administration at will. I won't be attending tomorrow's joint address. Well, it's probably for the best that you're not attending, because as Bill Maher pointed out, you just bring everyone down.
Voters aren't really savvy about the issues, but they do have it, they have made it clear what is important to them. Authenticity, balls, and charisma. Trump has that package, and so does Fetterman. He's only been a senator 2 years, and he's already more famous than most of his colleagues. Quick, I dare you to name this sad-looking lady from Washington State who's been in the Senate for 30 years. You can't teach charisma or balls.
Well, maybe better that she's not in the State of the Union gallery looking sad and stuff, but I thought it was so funny that Bill Maher does that, eviscerates Democrats for not having any charisma, not having any authenticity. So Democrats are like, well, we got to try, right? Oh my gosh, okay, we got to try to be authentic, edgy, cool. We got to start winning the culture battles again. And so Senator Elizabeth Warren did a great job. She put out this video, she even swore in it, and it was sort of like very TikTok influencer-y. Here it is.
When I win, I will immediately bring prices down starting on day one.
That ain't true. That's what you just heard. Since day one of Donald Trump's presidency, prices are up, not down. Inflation is getting worse, not better. The cost of groceries, gas, housing, yeah, even eggs, is getting higher. Meanwhile, Donald Trump has done nothing to lower costs for you.
She totally listened to Bill Maher's advice. That was cool. That was edgy. That was authentic. That would definitely appeal to the American people, and that's why Senator Cory Booker put out the same video as well.
When I win, I will immediately bring prices down starting on day one.
That ain't true. That's what you just saw. Since day one of Donald Trump's presidency,
prices are up.
Inflation is getting worse.
The prices of groceries, gas,
the cost housing, of groceries,
rent,
gas,
eggs,
housing,
yeah,
all
even eggs.
More expensive. Meanwhile, Donald Trump has done nothing to lower costs for you.
Nothing says authentic like two people putting out the exact same video. Well, how about 22 people putting out the exact same video?
When I win, I will immediately bring prices down starting on day one.
Not true.
So authentic. They just took Bill Maher's advice and they ran with it. Nothing says authenticity like parroting talking points given to you by a teen social media intern. Great stuff. Keep doing that. Love it. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll. I asked you guys on Patreon, Locals, and X, are you worried about how the tariffs on Mexico and Canada will impact your family's finances? Yes or no? Nicole, what about you? Are you worried about the tariffs and how they'll impact your finances?
No.
Really not
at all?
I mean,
I'm concerned for everyone. I'm not concerned necessarily for me because, I don't know, I just can...
Because you're rich or what?
No, I can adjust my consumerism, I suppose.
You can stop ordering off Temu?
Yeah, maybe.
Okay.
I'm not building a house right now, so, you know, things like that. I think I can adjust. Like, eggs are expensive. I don't know. I'm just not eating eggs right now.
Okay.
But I do, and I am supportive of the overall, I hope, messaging that this gives other countries and kind of represents for our country.
Yeah, and the goal, right?
Right.
The only thing is, like, I wish Mike and I had pulled the trigger on buying a new washer dryer. Ours is so old. I mean, it is decrepit, and I'm sure that the price of those is going to go up a little bit. So,
go get one today.
Well, that's
because
the thing.
They've already got it in, you know?
They can buy something that's American-made. American-made products are usually already more expensive, and I'm happy supporting America, but not everything. We don't produce everything here.
Right.
I mean, the reality is we have to import some stuff. So should have done it sooner. Let's see. Samantha Olson says, unfortunately, yes, I am concerned. However, we may feel some discomfort before it's going to get better. And I think the admin has been pretty transparent about that. We just feel it more in Washington State because Washington is just more expensive from all the other taxes. Street says, I'm retired and I have an adequate income and I have everything I need as far as consumer goods go. Car, appliances, toys. I will maybe cut back on food and travel. I'm thankful for everything and hope to help family members in need, though. I'm hopeful this upheaval shakes out and we can settle into a new normal soon while giving change a chance. Very well said. Wow, how thoughtful. Deagle, I voted no. We may feel a temporary pinch. However, my paycheck comes from the taxpayers in Seattle. And as we know, the taxpayers in Seattle are very generous when it comes to what they pay their city employees. Sharon, I said no for now because all the reports I've seen in mainstream media have that alarmist Trump's doing it, so it must be terrible feel to them. I haven't seen any actual objective overview of what the effects might be yet. And I think it's always time will tell, right? And how long is it even going to last? If it's a couple days, it's not going to be a big deal if it drags on for an extended period of time. But we have far more... We have a far, far greater ability to withstand the retaliatory tariffs than Canada and Mexico have to withstand our tariffs. I just hope I'm going to Mexico next month. What if they get real, real nasty and they say Americans can't come to Mexico?
Whoa.
Then I'd be pissed.
Yeah,
then I'd call Trump and be like, come on. Okay, dude. All right.
You're paying for another vacation.
Yeah. Let's do a couple more. Milani Madden says, I said yes because that's what media is telling us. Not sure if it'll affect me, though. Tiffany, I don't spend all day thinking about it, but I'm concerned enough to vote yes. I hope this is a chess move that is necessary to help the economy in this country, but I also don't want left-wing media to be in my ear all day about it. And I don't want it impacting my finances. Yes, I agree. I don't listen to left-wing media, so they can't be in my ear all day.
There you go.
Because that would be just very, very depressing. All right, we'll get to comments and our closing sanity check coming up next. First, I have talked about my success on the East Side Weight Loss Clinic program, eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. I am down 40 pounds. I've been able to keep it off for 2 years. And I always tell people when I talk about Eastside, not every weight loss program is going to be right for every person. One of the things I say about this is it is 60 days of really hard work. My first 60 days on the program, though, I lost 30 pounds. And so you see that weight coming off so quickly and the inches coming off, and it just gives you that motivation that you need to continue. And then at the end of 60 days, you can decide, okay, do I want to do another round of the program, or do I want to implement some of their lifestyle changes to try to keep the weight off for life? And that's what I did. And I lost 40 pounds total, but have been able to implement a few of their easy tricks just to make sure that I'm eating healthy, I'm eating the right combination of foods to help support a healthy metabolism, and that I am eating the right portions of food, which was a big issue for me, clearly, because I put on 40 pounds in a year during the pandemic. So I was just gobbling food down. Just gobbling it down. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Schedule your free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team today. Okay, questions, comments, super chats. Bill Biz, $20. Brandy, I just watched the Lisa Mannion interview. She's certainly the queen of the non-committal response at a time when we need prosecutors with a backbone. Yeah, for subscribers who watched Sundays with Subscribers this week, we had on King County Prosecutor Lisa Mannion. And I said in the show, I was really taken aback by how non-passionate, non-committal she was on some of these public safety issues. Like, I wanted her fiery, like, things are, what's happening is not right, and she just wasn't. It was sort of shocking to me, but
we've seen her be more passionate in interviews, so I don't know if she just came in very worried or
like I was going to try to trick her with something, and she was just walking
right
carefully around bombs that didn't exist. I'm not sure. It was interesting. Baron of Gray Matter, the state is fast becoming known nationally as an anti-child death cult and anti-women protection. Ooh, maybe that's for the best. Hello, watermelon. Wasn't that pleasant? Nobody says an embryo is exactly the same as a full-term baby, but you do not have a clearly defined line for justification, just fully developed, whatever that means. I'm not sure what that's in reference to. Is that
I think it's the way the law is written, because we say that it's at point of viability, but yeah, really that can vary. So
yeah,
I think
it varies. It's up to a doctor's mm-hmm. determination. Usually it's like 21 to 24 weeks. Becky, I cannot tell you how many times CPS workers have told me, just because someone uses heroin doesn't mean they can't parent a child. Yeah, it does, actually. Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. Greg Olakis on the case out of Yakima. This is truly so sad. Those in the legislature in this state who voted for this have blood on their hands and need to be held accountable. I agree. Bonnie says, these people never have any original thoughts. I mean, how do you not realize that having like every single Democratic senator put out this tacky video where you're doing the same thing, like, oh, let me sit back casually on a couch and say shit that ain't true. And then spew the exact same script over the exact same video, holding a little, like the same stuff the 14-year-old TikTokers use, right, holding your little mic up. I mean, if you have one person do it, oh, maybe that's edgy. But the other thing is they're not edgy people. So they can't, mm-mm, they're clearly trying to get that coolness back that Republicans seem to have captured. But having the same people do the, having 20 odd people do the exact same video and the exact same script, mm-hmm, in the internet age, you do realize that people are going to make fun of that, right? And pushing it all out on the same day. How do you not, if you don't realize that, how do you not realize that?
It's not the first time it's happened. And so I don't understand how you don't learn from this. But I guess that they just feel that their audience doesn't mind and thinks it's adorable.
Ugh.
It's bizarre. But don't you wish you were on that email? So in like some, the emails that we've leaked of their slides and how to message and whatever. I wish I was on that one.
Yeah. Here's a video we need you to tape. Make sure you sit casually on a couch and say shit that ain't true. Like what? Oh my God.
Be original. Memorize the script. And so
also
bizarre.
When Bill Maher talks about the importance of authenticity, because I do think we're in this age now where people don't care so much if you're the perfect person or the perfect politician. Mm-hmm. There isn't this purity test, but they want you to be authentic. They want to believe what you're telling them, that you say what you mean. I feel like for some people, they think authentic means just throw in a couple swear words.
Yeah.
Like I swear on the show occasionally, but I swear occasionally in real life as well. But it's like when you've got 75-year-old senators who are like, shit that ain't true, you know, that doesn't make you authentic by saying a few swear words in a social media video.
I know. It's
be yourself.
You're proving that you do whatever you're told.
Right.
instead of thinking for yourself, making decisions based on what your constituents want, right? And you're just doing what you're told to do.
It is insane. It's wild. Insane. These are people running our country. Captain Cranky Pants says you can't be authentic and a hypocrite at the same time. Very true. Skeletal Remains. Ooh, that's a dark username.
A little bit.
I really wish people would stop fear-mongering about tariffs. We deserve fair trade agreements, and there's a tremendous imbalance. Yes, it will be tough in the short term, but it will help us. Yeah, and I'm not trying to fear-monger. I think as long as you're, again, clear-eyed about it and the impact that tariffs can have. Tariffs can and will raise the cost of goods. So you can support the tariffs, but also understand that for some people, it'll make life a little bit more difficult. And if you're fine with that, you're fine with that. But as long as we're being honest about it. Let me see. Karen, Washington, wake up. Democrats in Olympia are working against us, not for us. Yeah, they're working for themselves and for their own interests. Let's see, one more from Street. We offload the raw lumber to be processed outside of Washington and pay through the nose to purchase the 2x4s and process lumber from outside Washington, Canada? I don't understand what that means. But yes, we pay a lot for lumber.
We pay a
lot. It's quite expensive. All right, good comments today. And with that, thank you, Nicole. Let's get to our closing sanity. I get to say it slow, so Nicole has time to play our closing sanity check. All right, Stephen A. Smith was on The View, so that you already know that that was entertaining. And of course, he's talked about maybe I'll run for president. He's a Democrat, doesn't like Donald Trump, but he's at least been willing to be forthright, authentic, one might even say, about the problems that the Democratic Party is having and about the reasons that the Democratic Party lost to Donald Trump and about the fact that there are still so many, including the ladies of The View, who refuse to be introspective at all about the ways the Democratic Party needs to improve.
It's only been in office for 6 weeks. Seems like 6 years, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And he's been going around with his cronies touting his so-called landslide and blowout win. But he won the popular vote by 1.5%, one of the smallest ever.
Mm-hmm.
And he won the general election by less than 50%. So what kind of mandate is this really?
Well, it is a mandate, and I'm going to explain why. And I don't mind the question, but let me be very clear. I'm no supporter of Trump. I'm a supporter of truth and the facts. And here's the facts. The man won every swing state. He increased in terms of his voter turnout in his favor from the standpoint of blacks, Latinos, and young voters. He increased his numbers in that regard from 2020. 89% of the counties shifted to the right. That's a mandate. We can sit up there and play around all we want to. In 2020, Trump didn't win the popular vote. He didn't win the Electoral College vote. A matter of fact, the Republicans hadn't won the popular vote, if I remember correctly, since 2004. Yeah. But they did this year. So 20 years after they last won a popular vote, they won the popular vote. They won the Electoral College vote. The man won every swing state. And on top of it, 89% of the counties shifted against. I don't understand how people can look at that and say, there's no mandate. There's a mandate.
Well, it's a different definition of a mandate, I guess.
But the problem is that if you're the Democratic Party and you lost 49.8% to 48.3% and you're looking at that 1.5% dip, that's an excuse for you to say, what we did really wasn't that bad.
Well, some people didn't
we should
show
continue
up.
To do that.
Do you
no,
think that those,
don't continue
those,
to do it. Find a new strategy.
That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you have not signed up to support our show already, please do so. That's how we do this live show 4 days a week, the Sunday show, all the other goodies that we push out, undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Just click on the little red box that says support the show for $5. We make it pretty easy. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.